Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. There's no such thing as a reasonable listening level. Just blare it. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Someday I'm going to have to ask J-Hap, Stephen Brunt, how he chose this as his walkout music. J-Hap doesn't strike me as a Rage Against the Machine guy. He strikes me as a Crowded House or a Counting Crows kind of guy.
He's a bit of a mystery, though, isn't he, really? Like, do you have a good read on J-Hap, the human being?
No.
No?
You don't expect this from him. But anyhow, listen, we need to talk about J-Hap this morning. And, well, we also need to talk about what it means to have 20 wins. Yeah, I know, Brent, this is a topic dear to your heart. Or more specifically, what it means that J-Hap, I mean, J-freaking-A-Hap, is a 20-game winner after last night's 10-2 Blue Jays blow to the Seattle Mariners. I mean, this is not to get into the whole non-debate about what pitching wins mean, because most smart baseball fans, looking at you, Dean Blundell, realize that they are a fundamentally useless stat. They are, in fact, Stephen Brunt, they are the hood ornament of baseball statistics, and I'm being polite. Simply put, not only aren't wins an individual accomplishment, as my friend Brent says, well, they're not all created alike. Consider a 10-9 win versus a 1-0 win, or I'll go in a different way, for that matter, a 1-0 loss. In which game did the starting pitcher perform better? I mean, the truth is we didn't even need the analytical revolution to devalue wins, or more precisely, assign them their real value. ERA is hardly an advanced stat, and it was long ago, a much more accepted mark of pitching excellence. You know, 20 wins might have meant something when starters were throwing 30 complete games a year, maybe, but they were never considered the be-all and end-all of pitching analysis that some of today's would-be old-time baseball guys think they were. People back then didn't value them as much as some people think they were valued back then, because pitching has never really been that easy to quantify. But I will say this about J-Hap. The number looks good next to his name, considering what we all thought about him the last time he was here. Coupled with his strong performance in the second half for Pittsburgh, it means that in a decent team, J-Hap won't be the type of guy who pitches your team out of games. That has to count for something, and that's something, frankly, nobody thought they'd be saying about J-Hap. So we'll take your calls this morning on what, if anything, winning 20 games means in this day and age. And I also want to talk about Canada's 4-2 win over Team USA in the World Cup of Hockey. I mean, I'm old enough to remember national commissions being struck to look into why we were losing our grip on hockey. Now at the elite level, at least, well, it seems we can't lose. And that has to say something about how we develop players, doesn't it? At any rate, there you are. Two topics for a busy Wednesday morning. The Blue Jays and Orioles tied for the wild card berth in the AL. The Jays due to play this afternoon. It is a great time to be a sports fan in this city. It's a great time to talk about it.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
I've seen these guys too good for too long, you know, and you know, I think it's been kind of refreshing coming here. You know, the weather's cooled off. I think it's energized some guys a little bit. And, of course, you know, that fan turnout here on the road has done something, too. So it's a good way to do it.
John Gibbons, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, after a 10-2 win over the Seattle Mariners last night. Stephen Brunt, a little more like it. Home runs, good pitching.
Yep.
Home runs, good pitching, more home runs.
Gibby sounded perky there, didn't he? I think the cool weather's good for him.
That's the happiest John Gibbons has sounded in about a month and a half.
Yeah, there's been that kind of tinge of resignation in his voice. And that sounded like a guy who says, you know, we're probably going to make the postseason. You know, we'll see what happens. God love him.
God love him indeed.
I got a question for you. Who votes on the Cy Young? Because I've never had
Two voters in every city. Two okay. members of the BBWAA in every city.
Selected by the...
By the local chapters.
Okay. So they are... It is a sports writer vote.
Yeah. I don't know who has it. I don't know who has the Cy Young votes in Toronto this year. I think I have a manager of the year vote. But I don't know who has the Cy Young votes. But it is two in each city. And I mean, with all due respect to Rick Porcello and Jay Happ, I think it's Zach Britton's to lose right now, to be honest. I think this is probably the year that a closer wins it.
I think there'll be a pretty vigorous, you know, whether it's right or wrong, there'll be a pretty vigorous debate between Porcello and Britton.
Yeah.
You know, and I think and Happ will get the Miss Congeniality Award here. But the only reason wins become relevant in that discussion is because there are some crusty old sports writers, not as many as there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be. They like the places they worked are becoming dinosaurs. But there were guys who kind of clung to that idea of the 20 game winner.
Yeah. The only thing is, you know, I'm thinking back to when I started voting, and we're talking 89. There were a lot of old school guys still around then. And I can remember guys looking at ERA more than wins all the time. Innings pitched.
So.
I mean, wins were like seventh on the list after innings pitched. Strikeouts, you know, ERA, a lot of those things.
Well,
if your closer saves, and then you kind of got down to wins.
I also like the fact that the only 20-game winner in the history of the Montreal Expos, and think of the great starting pitchers they had, was Ross Grimsley.
Right.
The only guy who ever won 20 for the Expos.
And Pedro Martinez won a Cy Young Award,
yeah.
winning, what, 17 games?
Yeah, it's just, you know, again, it's the most straightforward, it's not even a debate.
Mm-hmm.
It's as straightforward as anything because, you know, as you said, you can be credited for a win for a game that finishes 10-9, and you can be credited with a loss for a game that finishes 0-1. It's a team statistic, and there are all kinds of other ways to measure pitching. Now, that said, Jay Happ, with his 20 wins, has had a great season.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a low 3 ERA. He has been as consistent as anybody in the rotation. And the two most significant offseason moves made by the Toronto Blue Jays were signing Jay Happ and giving Marco Estrada the qualifying offer and then doing the deal with him. Because those two fifths of their rotation have been extraordinarily consistent. And again, the key to this team's success this year has been the rotation. Yeah, they went out and scored a bundle of runs last night. It was bombs away and reminiscent of the 2015 Blue Jays. But, you know, you look at that rotation, and if you don't have the kind of every turn consistency mm-hmm. that you've had from Estrada, except when he was hurt, and Happ especially, who is, you know, really the whole season, they're not where they are now. So tip of the cap to the front office, and I know there are, you know, those are collective decisions. Tony LaCava was certainly involved.
Mm-hmm.
But as was the, you know, none of these things happen unless the new president signs off on them. And they, those turned out to be very savvy, not flashy decisions, not decisions anybody got excited about, except a few people who said, you know, Jay Happ in Pittsburgh was really mm-hmm. good. But, you know, the notion that those two guys were the front of your rotation, and they are, you know, like I know Sanchez has been unbelievable, but to me, those are your 1-2.
Well, and let's consider what Jay Happ has done in this past month. He's been a stopper.
Yep.
Two series. Last night, you know, he put the Jays in position to win the series. They can wrap it up or they can sweep it this afternoon. Jay Happ essentially has saved the Jays three games in the standings.
Yeah. Well, the Boston
three games
game,
in the season,
and yeah. what, and this game, and what was the other? There was one in between there too. Right?
Was it in L.A.? He won. I think he won. I'm sure he won another game in a night where the Red Sox or Orioles won as well.
But the big one, you know, that you think back is that Red Sox series,
which
was otherwise a car wreck. But the day after the players only meeting, Jay Happ went out and won the game.
And at the end of the year, if the Jays have won the wild card by two games, yeah. You can make the case that Jay Happ was absolutely integral. And that's the 20 wins I don't think mean anything. But in the case of a guy like Jay Happ, I kind of think there's a little bit of significance to it. Just a little bit of significance to it because I think it shows that he's just not another guy. He's a guy who can pitch well on a good team, you know, and I think that can kind of count for something.
Yeah, whether, you know, I'm not sure the W is what it matters. I think the idea of a true stopper, which you know, that a term which gets used incorrectly a lot, but what it means is that you have a guy in your rotation who stops the slide.
Yeah.
So to come out and give you a quality start when everything else is falling apart, right, which keeps you in a game by definition, doesn't, you know, can't ensure that you win that game, but it allows you to be competitive when other things aren't working. And, you know, you think of guys, you know, Roy Halladay was that for the Toronto Blue Jays?
Right.
You know, that no matter kind of what the circumstances were, when Roy Halladay's turn came around, you knew you had a chance to win. And Jay Happ has been that guy through some, you know, rather rough water here at the end of the season and has been incredibly important to this team. And I think, you know, again, I'm not saying, you know, it's all that's, you know, all concerns are erased at this point, but they have kind of steadied the ship here and they're going to come out of this road trip in with a winning record.
They're going to have held serve.
They're going to have held serve.
That's basically what they've done.
And the Red Sox, yeah, the Red Sox have pulled away, but that the you know, the other, the consequences of that is that the Orioles have been kind of beaten down.
Yeah.
So, you know, now you can, you know, there are still teams trailing them, but they're going to be nipping at the red, at the Orioles' heels first.
And again, it kind of sets up the interesting prospect of the Boston Red Sox having nothing to play for in that final series, but getting everybody healthy. And if you're the Blue Jays, and look, the Red Sox will play the games, but I guarantee you that if there's nothing to play for, David Ortiz is missing at least one game. You know, I guarantee you that. Knowing the way John Farrell thinks, I'm sure they'll, you know, they would rest some of their, and they're not going to rest five guys in one game, but I'm sure they'll find a way to make sure that Dustin Pedroia skips a game and Xander Bogaerts skips a game and David Ortiz skips a game.
Look, and if this plays out and it's, if the season finished right now, if it was a Blue Jays Orioles wild card game at the Rogers Center with the hated Showalters coming in and the winner plays Texas, I'm okay. I'm okay with that. You know,
yes.
As you know, we always root for the story.
Yes.
I'll root for that story. That's a good story.
That's a very good story. And if you get a chance, by the way, do some reading or take a look at what happened in Texas last night against the LA Angels. It was tremendous. Coaches getting into it, managers getting into it, guys throwing at each other. And just an awful lot of bad blood. And if Texas clinches today in front of L.A., which would be the second time they've done it in front of L.A., it's going to be a very interesting situation. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. We'll ask you the question Stephen Brunt and I are talking about. I think we know the answer, but we'll use it as a basis for discussion. Does 20 wins mean anything to you? We've also, Stephen, got to talk a little bit in the first hour about Team Canada and its 4-2 win over Team USA in the World Cup of Hockey. And Greg Wyshynski, who just carved USA Hockey and Team USA a new one in his column on Yahoo Sports, will join us. And I threw out this suggestion a couple of days ago. I think in a lot of ways, at the NHL level, at these, you know, the level these competitions are being played at, I mean, the men's dominance, the Canadian men's team's dominance, it's almost like the dream team in the U.S. It really is.
Yep.
This is, I have never seen a run of just flat out soul sucking, we're going to kill the game dominance by Canadian quote unquote national teams as we've seen it since Vancouver.
Yeah, like that wasn't that, like last night wasn't suffocating like a Sochi game, but it was dominant.
It's never in doubt.
No, well, it was in doubt for the first little bit when Americans had a good shift and got a lead and looked like they were going to, you know, they might work incredibly hard and make Canada a little uncomfortable and score some dirty goals and you know, maybe, but the, you know, Canada was ahead 2-1 in the blink of an eye, and then and at that point, game over.
Yeah.
And you kind of looked at the tournament and said, "Well, you know, Sweden's probably the second best team here."
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's kind of setting up for a Canada-Sweden final.
Yeah, my Finns aren't...
Your Finns, I believe, are done.
Yeah, finished.
But it's kind of hard to make a case that Sweden's going to beat these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hope there's some intrigue along the way. Look, I hope that Team North America-Sweden game this afternoon is fun. You know, it'd be great if the North American guys can go, if the under 24 guys can go through somehow, but it's almost like the die is cast already, right? You kind of look at this trend, and I know that's kind of what everybody expected. It was Canada's to lose, but yes, dream team like dominance. The dream team has lost. Team Canada loses occasionally, but there's really there's a gulf between them and everybody else in the world right now. It's really changed that.
Yeah.
You know, that's not us in our bitter rival threatening to topple us from the peak. It's you know, kind of looking down at everybody right now. It's I'm not sure that's totally a great thing, but
no, but for,
that's the way it is right now.
You know, for people our age, I mean, not to say that we're old or anything, but I mean, I can remember getting excited about Canada beating the Russians because you went from not respecting the Russians to really respecting the Russians to essentially expecting them to win because they just seemed to be so much smarter and better shape, yada yada, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was a period where it was close, and you know, you had the Czech Republic, but it's gotten to the point now where it's like Canada and a whole bunch of other countries, you know, and maybe Sweden every now and then rises to the occasion. But in terms of style, in terms of coaching, in terms of players, this is far and away the best run of international hockey I've seen from Canada in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I'm shocked when they lose now. I'm not surprised. I'm absolutely stunned when they lose a game now.
Like I was talking about, I did a thing with Igor Larionov at the Hockey Hall of Fame on Monday morning. And, you know, and I was joking with him that, you know, Canadians have, we have kind of selective memories about dates. Like, we really remember, we're great on 72 and 76 and 87 and 2002 and 2010 and 20, where we would someday, but, you know, we don't necessarily remember, you know, 81. What happened then? You know, what happened in that Canada Cup?
Yeah.
Or 96? You know, but that, like, and that 81 Soviet team, the Canada Cup team, that dominated that tournament. Ugh. So that was the team that, you know,
they were
so
scary good.
Yeah, and they're coming off losing the Miracle on Ice stuff to the Americans, and there's all, you know, and that team is one of the greatest teams ever assembled.
Yeah,
and they smoked Canada,
yeah,
right? That they were great, but that seems like a million years ago.
Yeah,
and you know, so there have always been those. It was kind of Canada and somebody, and it kind of waxed and waned. You know, the Swedes won the Lillehammer gold medal, but that was a different, that wasn't an all NHL tournament. But this is, yeah, this is the first time, you know, and as you say, kind of a long stretch now where, like, I guess the last speed bump was Turin,
mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody kind of agrees that that was a badly, you know, there's some bad calls made on assembling right. That team, that they kind of stuck with the guys won Olympics too long, some of them. And, you know, that seems, but, you know, again, another distant, faded Canadian memory. We don't ever talk about Turin. We talk a lot about Vancouver.
Right.
We talk a lot about Salt Lake. But really, yeah, Vancouver on, right? It's mm-hmm. been clinical.
And as it was kind of predictable, you know, the Americans, John Tortorella in particular, pointed out in his news conference, you know, that essentially said, well, look, things would have been a little different if we'd had access to some of the under 23 players. Well, Connor McDavid would also look pretty good in a Canadian uniform. I mean, in a way I agree with Tortorella because I think the US picking the American born players in that under 23 team, more of them I think could have made Team USA than the Canadian under 23s could have made the Canadian team. But a lot of that was because of the mistakes Team USA made in selecting.
Yeah, yeah. If you've got Phil Kessel, for God's sake. If you've got Matthews and Eichel, are you going to play the same kind of hockey? Are you going to play? You're going to go and try and out grit and out tough Canada? You know, are you going to leave skilled guys like Kessel back home? Like that, they made enormous mistakes. Now, if they put their most skilled team on the ice and they tried to play that game, mm-hmm. they lose.
Yeah.
They still lose.
See, that to me is really, that's the other thing here. And we'll get to the phone lines in a minute. But I've really kind of found this intriguing because I really think that all this talk on the part of the Americans about wanting grit and, you know, trying to design their team to beat Canada really misreads what Canadian hockey is all about. Canadian hockey is about skill and speed. You know, yeah, there's that still, that sort of sandpaper, that grit, you know, the stuff that the puckheads like to talk about. That's a part of it. But at the elite level, it's just the players are so talented, they're so fast, and you've got a generation of players now, like Sidney Crosby, like Jonathan Toews, John Tavares, Connor McDavid's in that mode. These are guys who understand that the definition of toughness has changed in the NHL.
Yeah, none of those guys are fragile flowers.
Right? No, they're not fragile. I mean, you hit Sidney Crosby, he'll hit you back, or, you know, he's so big, you'll bounce off him. They're not fragile, but they understand that they don't have that sort of chip in their shoulder that if you take a shot at me, I've got to drop the gloves and go after you. I mean, the way to be tough in the NHL right now is not get knocked off your feet. Mm-hmm. And if you do get knocked off your feet, just get up and keep going. That's the mark of toughness now. Fighting isn't a mark of toughness. Not even delivering a crushing hit is a mark of toughness.
Well, neither of them happen very often anymore.
No.
Right? They're not really part of the game anymore on a night-to-night basis in the NHL, and it's certainly at this level. Well, fighting's never been part of international hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, if you go back to the kind of, again, if you want to go into kind of ancient lore and, you know, Bobby Clark hacking away at, Harlamov's ankle and mm-hmm. how we intimidated the Russians in those series, or the Flyers running Red Army off the ice, right? That kind of stuff. That's long gone. You know, we don't have to win that way anymore.
Yep.
You know, we don't have to win that way because and as you say, I think the game has evolved, and you're right. Toughness is about kind of the overall, the kind of physical presence of hockey players. The mm-hmm. fact that these guys are incredibly skilled, and yeah, you can't push them around and you can't intimidate them. And if you want to get into that, if you want to mess it up with them a little bit, they'll be there. But no dumb stuff, right? No knee-jerk stuff.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and they can all skate. They can all play.
Let's go to the phone lines. I know a lot of you want to talk about Jay Happ. You want to talk about the 20 wins, and you also want to talk about Team Canada and Team USA. So we'll get to the phone lines. Lawrence in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Pleasure to talk to you guys. Welcome back, Stephen. Missed you over the summer.
Thank you.
I called last year, right around this time. I was in St. Petersburg, Russia, and what you guys said about Canadians having selective hockey memories just reminded me of my time in St. Petersburg, because the 1972 Summit Series is completely taken differently by the Russians. They see it as a win. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah. I know. And just, Stephen, I hold the line, Lawrence, because, Stephen, we talked about this. I don't even know if people know this. You found something interesting out from Igor Larionov about why this tournament isn't being covered in Russia. And Lawrence, just hang on.
Yeah, with this show, they're not showing these games on TV in Russia, and which is interesting because again, there's a lot of political connections with the KHL, mm-hmm. but the idea that, you know, that this is a showcase for the NHL and NHL players and Russians playing in the NHL, and the KHL guys are still trying to, you know, suggest that their best players are at home or that more of their best players are going to play at home. So it's a bit of a dicey political situation in Russia, but they're kind of protecting, in order to kind of protect the image of the KHL, they're not showing this series.
Go ahead, Lawrence. I just thought that you jogged my memory there. Go ahead, Lawrence.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I wasn't aware of it, but that doesn't surprise me. I wanted to talk a little bit about what you guys said in the opening about Jay Happ. I feel like you're very Wilner-esque in terms of in this moment in time.
Wilner-esque.
Wilner-esque.
I love that.
In this moment in time, bringing up all the stats. I mean, no question wins don't mean everything. But in terms of storyline, in terms of emotional availability to the rest of your team and your fan base, I think that Jay Happ has been nothing more than a success. Like you guys did end up getting to, he's really come through in the clutch in very many moments. He's only had that weird day then Gibby took him out after 2 1/3 a few weeks ago. And other than that, he's only got 4 losses. So I feel like it's really important to really put him on the pedestal for the success that he's been, because he has been a success and he really has been a stopper. He really has been a presence on the mound for the team. Maybe not David Wells with the smile. I mean, sorry, David Price. Sorry, so sorry. Maybe not David Price in the clubhouse with the smile, but definitely if David Price had the exact same stats, we would be talking Cy Young right now.
Yeah, I don't think anybody means to denigrate his performance. I would make the argument that And this, again, gets back to pitchers' wins, that you can have a game, you can be a stopper and not be the pitcher of record in that game. You can go out and pitch 7 great innings and have the game decided in the 8th or 9th inning. But my point about wins with Happ is, to me, it's just, again, there are times where the number is significant because it says something about the journey that the guy has gone on. You have to know the history of the pitcher. You have to know his background to kind of understand that. I mean, because if you had told people 3 years ago Jay Happ was going to be a 20-game winner, I mean, people's first reaction was he'd never pitch enough innings to be in a position to win 20 games because he wasn't a front-of-the-rotation guy. So I guess that's what I meant when we talked about the 20 wins. Let's bring in Scott from Midtown. Sorry.
No.
Let's go Sean in Brampton. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Steven. How's it going?
Good.
First, quickly with the John Tortorella thing,
I think with him, it seems like there was a lot of ego coming into this tournament, a lot of hockey politics involved in some of the decisions that he makes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just ultimately came back to bite them in the end. Like, you had better guys available to you. And I think the whole thing, just trying to focus on beating Canada, I think it was too focused. You don't focus enough on beating the other teams, and it came back to bite them in the end.
Yeah, I guess the charitable take on John Tortorella is that he creates a bunch of attention and turmoil around himself in order to take the heat off his players. So that's a very charitable interpretation of John Tortorella. But singling out his own players, again, especially in a short tournament, yeah. Like in a short situation where you're already picking on guys, you're singling out players, you're singling out Max Pacioretty. How can that possibly work?
You know, the only thing I thought of is in the coaching manual, someplace in the middle of the coaching manual is make them all hate me, right? I mean, if you're a head coach and you're trying to find something to unify your team, one of the cards you can play is just make them all hate me.
And Scotty Bowman, you know, they all hated Scotty.
But I don't
right?
think, but that might work over 80 games or however many games, or 162 games, but it doesn't work in a short tournament.
Nope. They need to respect you.
They need to respect you. And I just think that the Team USA approached this tournament with the idea that they could win an emotion because it was early in the year and you're not going to be getting the best from a lot of guys. And I think, quite frankly, I think John Tortorella and Team USA, one, misread what Canadian hockey is all about, which I find really surprising. But number two, I think they misread the tournament. I really do. I think they thought they would come in and they'd have to play well in one game. They'd have to beat Canada, and whatever it took to beat Canada, they'd be fine. And I think they got a wake-up call.
Well, I think they thought Team Europe was a gimme. Right?
Team Europe was a gimme, and John Tortorella got out-coached.
Yeah.
He got out-coached by Ralph Krueger, and his team got outplayed, and they never, ever recovered from that. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. We'll go back to the phone lines. It's the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt. Greg Wyshynski, Mr. Puck Daddy as we call him, has written a column on Yahoo Sports, burned down Team USA from its philosophy to its leadership.
It's great.
So we'll mark him down as undecided as to John Tortorella's success.
It's funny how
Greg will join us at 10 o'clock, by the way.
How many people seem to be savoring the opportunity to jump on John Tortorella and or Brian Burke? Dean Lombardi kind of gets a little bit of a pass because the other two guys are...
Well, the other two guys are a little more out there.
Yes.
You know, and on a personal level, everybody likes Brian. But, I mean, that was such a Brian Burke team to put together.
Yeah.
We'll leave some of the skill guys at home. We'll be truculent.
Yeah.
And,
They weren't that truculent against Team Europe.
No. No, and I think I think it was Luke Fox pointed out on Sportsnet.ca, you look at the stats, Team USA led in hits, almost doubled Canada in hits and blocked shots.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a John Tortorella team. It's just a John Tortorella team isn't good enough to win in this tournament.
I think now the tradition in American hockey would be when they go wreck the hotel rooms, right?
Yes.
When they're out of the tournament, isn't that when they all get drunk and wreck the room?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm not sure where they're staying in town, but you might want to watch out for that.
There is, and it's a great story too. There is a real tradition of sort of ne'er-do-wells being involved in the U.S. hockey program. Not that all our boys are clean cut and
as Mr. Brandeo points out, though, the guys in my ear, the guys who were tweeting about the lack of grit and character in this team, they were the guys that wrecked the hotel rooms, right?
That's very true. That's a good point.
The Athletes Village rooms in Nagano.
Yeah.
But they were the 96 victors, and they were the guys who went out so ingloriously in 98.
Yes.
So, I think some of those guys might have been involved.
Anyhow, there are some tremendous tweets. Phil Kessel's tweet, far and away. Phil Kessel owned Twitter last night. 55,000 retweets of last look. Phil Kessel. What is Travis McKenzie handing me? Okay. Phil Kessel's tweet about, you know, sitting at home with his dog, sort of twiddling his thumbs, feeling he should be doing something else, was tremendous. The dude from the U.S. sled hockey team, who basically said he was happy to, that he was born without legs, so that, you know, he played for the U.S. sled hockey team, and he said, you know, the sled hockey team does a better job of standing up to Canada than the U.S. men's team did.
That's tough.
Tweet has since been deleted. Tweet has since been deleted, but
Phil Kessel, yikes. The king of the one-liner. I missed that when he was here.
He did. Yeah, we tried to get Josh Paul on, and Travis, you said he declined our interview request. So there you go. Because I saw that, and my first reaction, because I had Twitter open last night, and I've been really good about this, normally avoiding it, but I had it open last night because I knew there was going to be some prime John Tortorella hate happening, and it's, you know, you got to at least watch it. And, man, when I saw this, my first reaction was, okay, this is, you know, you don't retweet this because it's, you know, there's got to be something wrong here. You know, nobody's saying that they're happy to be born without legs, yada, yada. Nope. It was him.
Wow.
So, anyhow.
You know, but, you know, I would argue that, like, they didn't show up for the Team Europe game at all. Like, they did look like they were hungover for that game. They tried last night.
They're just not good enough. Yeah.
It wasn't like they didn't show. I think they gave it their all last night. That's all they've got. That's it. And with that group.
Here it is. Really glad I was born without legs. The U.S. sled team has a much better track record of success than the U.S. stand-up men's team. That from Jason Paul. Like, that's cutting.
Yes.
Those sled hockey guys are down on you as a coach. You got trouble, man. Go back to the phone lines. We can continue talking about Team USA, Team Canada, or the Jays. Whichever way you want to go. Peter in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just want to start off by saying, you know, kudos to Hap getting his 20 wins. You know, George Tortellini, I like to call him. I mean, wrong choice of coach. Absolutely dreadful. Brian Burke, I mean, should not have been in charge as well. Who would I have chosen? I don't know. I don't know a lot of the American executives or coaches, but I don't know how they left Phil Kessel off. But I just wanted to touch on the Jays. You know, everybody's, you know, they win a couple games, and now we're a playoff team. I mean, we need to be mindful that last year we were one swing away from being knocked out and not even making it to the, you know, championship division finals. And, you know, I think this team is good.
This team won the division last year, right?
They won the division. I'm in reference to, you know, playing Kansas City, but going back to Texas. I mean,
yeah, but that, okay.
But
that,
if Batista didn't hit the home run, what would we be talking about this year, and what would we be measuring them up to? I mean, I don't think this has been a successful year. I think it's been a good year. I think the team is good.
You've been around the last 20 years at all? You know, it's
I've been around since 72. I've been around for many years, and I don't think they're I don't think you can measure them up to Chicago, Boston, you know, Cleveland. Even I know Cleveland's doing okay, but I think they're in big trouble. And I think and I always preach this. I think we just tolerate mediocrity, and I don't think we strive for greatness. And I think we've just become very.
How do you not strive? Tell me why. How do you not strive for greatness? How explain that to me?
Well, because it's okay that they can lose, you know, 4 out of 10 to mediocre teams or teams that
you're playing 600. If you lose 4 out of 10, you're playing 600.
Well, that's not good enough. I mean, I measure.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, can we stop this?
Let's go on.
You know what? If Bobby Thompson doesn't hit the home run, they don't win the pennant.
I understand. You know, look, it's going to be hard. It's hard to ride along with my God, they look like they're never going to score another run, and they can't pitch to save their life. Oh, my God, J-Hap looks like a beast, and they got 5 home runs in a game and all that. I get that, but... You know, the idea settle for mediocrity, as a caller said.
That is dumb.
Yeah, I don't. You know, the mediocrity. I don't know. I don't see it.
Well, the thing is, look, I don't know. You know, we don't know what's going to happen between now and the end of the season. We don't know what's going to happen in the postseason. Postseason series can go all kinds of interesting ways, and all kinds of surprising things can happen. You know, Kansas City Royals can win the World Series. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff happens. But the one thing I do know is that for virtually any team in the history of baseball, even the Cubs this year, you can probably pull a 10-game stretch out of their season and go, man, they weren't very good. because, you know, the beauty of the 162-game season is that everybody has stretches where they're not very good. But if, you know, if you're into late September and you're, what are they, 14 games over 500 mm-hmm. right now, you're a pretty good baseball team. You know, that's not a fluke. Doesn't mean you're necessarily going to win. But the fact that Boston right now is flying high and is finally kind of taking control of the American League East late in September doesn't mean they're going to win either.
Yep.
I'd say there's been a lot of mediocrity in the last 20 years. This ain't it.
No, I don't consider – it's not – look, it's a different team than last year. We've all made that point. I don't know. At times this year, I thought the lineup was better than last year's lineup. I probably don't feel that way right now, although I'll throw a caveat. Healthy, completely healthy, I think this lineup may be better than last year's lineup. But, yeah, I certainly wouldn't use the word mediocrity. Patrick in Toronto. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, Jeff. I just want to make a point that I think you guys, you've made your point about 20 games are not as significant as, or 20 wins are not as significant as they once were. But I think you're going way too far in the other direction and downplaying the significance of it. And I think that's evidenced by the fact that it's so hard to do in today's day and age in this quick hook world that we live in.
Exactly. But that's, again, that's, you see, and that's my point entirely, is the win is not, it is something the pitcher doesn't control, right?
I completely disagree with that. You talk to pitchers throughout the ages, and they'll tell you when the score is 5-0 or 4-0, I'm kicking back and I'm pitching to the score of that baseball game. Eh. I'm throwing my fastball. I'm not bearing down as much. You could listen to interviews with Koufax or Halliday, or I heard Hinken, I think, on your show or on one of the 590 shows the other day, talking about how the fact of a few extra runs lets me relax, lets me pitch a different way. I don't have to bear down and throw.
Yeah, but that's my point.
The way I throw when it's 2-1.
But that's my point. So you're I mean, you're arguing against yourself there. The more runs that you have scored for you, the easier it is to win, correct?
No, my point is,
well, that's true.
Actually is not that, but yes, of course that's correct.
Well, then there's no argument.
My point is that the great pitchers, and I'm not necessarily saying that Jay Happ is a great pitcher, but I do think he's had a great season. And I'll say that the great pitchers pitch differently in a 2-1 game than a 4-0 game, or watch their pitch count more. They've done over the ages what they have to do to win a ball game. And to say that 20 wins is not as so significant, and the other part that makes it significant are the four losses. I mean, you can make the point that Jay Happ has been certainly the most consistent Blue Jay pitcher throughout the entire season. He's got 20 wins. He's got four.
Would you feel that way if he was 17-4, 16-4, 15-4?
I would say that's not as significant as being 20-4.
Okay.
Very hard to do.
We're gonna have to disagree with that, because, you know, again, I think you're arguing against yourself. You're basically saying that a pitcher throws differently, or, you know, approaches a game differently with the lead as opposed to being behind.
Well, it's pretty hard to win 20 games with a bad team.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's not something the pitcher controls.
No, it isn't. And, again, to your point about...
And it's pretty easy to lose 20 games, even if you're a decent pitcher sometimes, yes, with a really bad team.
And the point about being taken out of the game, again, that's just further to the point.
Yeah, look, the 5-man rotation versus the 4-man rotation, the guys have fewer appearances than they did back in the day. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not that wins are less valued now than they were. Well, you know, a win is exactly the same thing as it was 50 years ago.
Right.
It's just that, you know, there was a more traditional way of looking at numbers, and
but even
or
then,
not looking at
I
numbers.
Keep making the point, even then, you know, like people will try to set up this argument where, well, it's the newfangled guys who don't value wins as much as the older guys. You know, you talk to guys like Hentgen and Koufax and guys like that, it won't take long, they'll mention ERA as well. You know, ERA is still the most, I think, of the quote-unquote old-school stats, still the most reliable measure of a pitcher's success.
And I don't disagree that guys, if they get a six-run lead, you know, pitch a little differently and more aggressively than they will if it's a tie game.
Right.
That's but that doesn't. I'm not sure that makes the case.
Yep. No, I agree. Tony in Belleville, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's up, Tony?
Good morning.
Morning.
I just want to talk about the hockey game last night.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of surprised prior to the game, the lead up, you know, the level of confidence, not cocky or arrogant, but just confidence that the Canadian team had towards the game in the tournament. And, you know, it got me reflecting on U.S. hockey. I think a lot of their issues really stem from the way they're developing players. I think the U.S. development program is producing some really talented, you know, like very talented players. But, you know, the 96 team was more traditional kind of junior hockey developed players. Mm-hmm. And they seem to, in my opinion, the 96 team for the U.S., whether I didn't really like their bravado, but as NHL or, like, you know, competitive hockey players internationally, I thought that was a different class of team. You know, that's, and maybe it is just the way they're developing them, or, you know, I mean, the NCAA guys or that other program, they don't, I don't think they have the seasoning for this type of a tournament. I don't know if that's valid or...
Yeah,
you know.
I really think that, Stephen, I don't know how you feel about this, but I really think we have fun with John Tortorella because he's John Tortorella, and every time he loses a hockey game, you know, an angel gets its wings. It's just, it's the way it is. But... you know, I think more often than not, the issues with U.S. hockey are the people doing the picking and the organization itself and some of the decision making.
Well, the 96 team,
it seems like an old boys club in a lot of ways, well, even more than Hockey Canada.
Yeah, and the 96 team came along at a certain point with a certain group of guys. I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure. They also had the best goaltender in the world at that point, was Mike Richter,
right?
Who, you know, was crazy good. So that helped them get through that series. You know, again, the young players on the North American players on the North American team look awfully good to me. Now, some of them have come through the NCAA. Some of them have come through junior hockey. One of them went to Switzerland. So, I don't know. I don't have a kind of a blanket take on hockey player development in the United States. Maybe Wyshynski does. But, I'm not sure if that's the issue. I just think that, you know, I think they picked the wrong team for the times. I'm not sure if they picked the right team, they would have beaten Canada. But I think we all agree, and I think everybody, and this is not, you know, this isn't Monday morning quarterbacking. Almost a lot of people said going into this tournament, you know, that's a mistake. What you're doing is, and they were kind of waiting for this thing to fail, and then it did fail. So now they're saying, I told you so.
Yeah, it's, I really do think it just gets back to the fact that that the people in charge of the team, they just misread the tournament, and they misread Team Canada. They really did. It's odd. There still seems to be that perception of Canadian hockey in the United States. And I find it very strange. Canadian hockey is much, much more nuanced than people give it credit for. You know, even people who cover it and on a daily basis, I think sometimes they lose sight of the fact just how nuanced this game is and how... You know, I don't know. That seems like kind of a cliche word.
Well,
but this team is nuanced. There's a lot of layers to this particular onion.
There is. Really? There are. Yeah. And there's also no kind of stylistic kryptonite that's going to beat them.
Exactly.
Right? Like, I don't care. Like, they're better. And something could happen between now and the end of this tournament. We'll all say, man, we didn't see that coming. But I don't think so.
And I think one of the other things at work here, too, there is a generation, and this would be a great topic to talk to somebody like Doug McLean about, but there's a generation of Canadian hockey players, Tavares, Taves, Crosby, who are more than happy to accept a diminished role on the national team. You know, guys who are top line guys in their team, Mike Babcock wants them to play third line minutes, they'll play third line minutes. And I think a lot of that gets to Sidney Crosby, because I really think that his ability to sort of step back and think about the whole really sets a tone for these other guys. And that's a generational thing.
Yeah, it's not like the complimentary player goes too far, but he is willing to not be the top dog every shift, every game.
Exactly. And, you know, I think we used to always talk about Canadians are willing to go the extra mile in hockey to get stuff done. We used to automatically assume that that meant block a shot or, you know, take somebody out or slash somebody's ankles. Well, the extra mile can also mean taking a step back and saying, you know what, I can help this team by being on a line with these two guys. We're going to get reduced ice time. We're going to have to check. We'll go ahead and do it. And I think that's a real credit to this particular generation of Canadian hockey players. A huge credit to them. Greg Wyshynski is editor of the Puck Daddy blog on Yahoo Sports. He's also co-host of the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. He absolutely torched the U.S. program in his piece on Yahoo Sports, and he's going to join us when the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.